a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show on this Wednesday, February 22nd of 2023. I am Paul Gallant, and as Mr. Voiceman himself said, this is the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. You can call and you can text in on the HRNP listener line at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You can tweet me at Gallant Says, at ESPN975, or at Sean A. Mapes behind the glass. And of course, you can join us on twitch.tv/ESPN975 if you want to really have some fun. Sean Mapes, top knot day on this hump day. How you doing today?
Doing good. Doing good. Yep. It's the hump is right on top of my head.
You seem really thrilled. We're halfway through the week.
Okay.
Rodeo cook-off starts tomorrow.
Yeah, you're more than halfway through your week.
That's true. I took off on Friday.
Yeah.
For religious reasons.
Uh-huh. Because you have a rollover day and you don't want to lose it?
I have no comment on the matter.
Okay.
Listen, it's rodeo cook-off weekend. Don't you want me to be a responsible young man who's 33, about to turn 34?
Who's 7 years older than me? Yeah.
Wow. I mean, now you're just being mean. Easy.
What?
Easy.
Where am I wrong?
You're not wrong.
I want you to be... Because it sounds weird if I'm like... Paul, I'm very proud of the young man you've become.
We're in denial.
When you graduated college, my sophomore year of high school, I was like, man, what a guy.
You're just rubbing it in.
What?
Now. Just twist
what?
The knife a
no,
little bit
No, some of
more.
The Texans teams that you covered were my favorites growing up.
Okay, you know.
You covered some of my favorite Texans teams when I was a young lad.
Easy Yuri from the Balkans with your Adidas tracksuit on. Okay, let's not get too personal with one another to open up the show. It's going to be fun today on the Paul Gallant Show. Chandler Rome from West Palm Beach and spring training. Everyone's favorite. He's going to join us at 10:15. I'm going to make you like this guy. He is funny. I like him. We're going to talk about what's been going on at Astros spring training. He put together an article in the Houston Chronicle that I saw yesterday, and it talks about Framber Valdez, who now with Justin Verlander gone, is thought to be the Astros ace. He was fifth in the American League Cy Young voting. He got a victory in the All-Star game. He got a victory in the World Series. Threw an American League high 201 and one-third innings last year. Set a major league record with 25 consecutive quality starts. I mean, check, 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 check. He's an ace, right? Framber Valdez is an ace. That leads me to this question. What the hell is an ace? I looked this up because I feel like it's one of those terms that is entirely subjective. Much like as Political Rot pointed out to me when I posed the question on Twitter, franchise quarterbacks are subjective. Per Wikipedia, a baseball ace is a starting pitcher considered the best pitcher on a team and nearly always the first pitcher in the team's starting rotation. Barring injury or exceptional circumstances, an ace typically starts on opening day. In addition, aces are usually preferred to start crucial playoff games, sometimes on 3 days rest. The Wikipedia definition of baseball ace continues. The term may be a derivation of the nickname of Asa Brainard. Asahe is his real first name. A 19th century star pitcher who was sometimes referred to as ace. Okay, so we're going back to the 1800s from this. Because I figured that ace came from the term that we use to describe fighter pilots in the early days of aviation. The Red Baron in World War I flying a biplane. Or insert a number of pilots during World War II where planes really became the future of warfare.
I thought it had to do with playing cards.
That would make sense too.
Ace is the best playing card.
Generally. Because, yes, in most
depending
games,
on the game, you blah, 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 blah. Generally, it's the best.
Are you a big cards guy, Sean?
No.
Okay.
But I know that.
Okay. Could be that. But modern baseball analysts, guys, have started to use the term ace to refer to the elite pitchers in the game, not necessarily to the best starting pitcher on each team. I don't think I could go all the way and call Framber Valdez an ace, even though he did have the amazing consecutive start streak and proved that his postseason issues of 2021 are in the past. I can't quite go there because I don't think he has the best stuff on the Astros. I think Christian Javier has the best stuff on the Astros. I think also that the Astros, if you were to give them some truth serum and ask them, hey, who is the ace of your pitching staff? Or who do you want the ace of your pitching staff to be? I think given the fact that they gave Christian Javier that contract, which is exceptionally team-friendly, they're hoping that it's Javier. So I guess the question is, and this is, you know, a first-world problem, you have two guys who are capable of being aces. Can there only be one? To, you know, make a reference to the movie Highlander. I think that's it, right? It's like about the Scotsmen who are immortal, and you can only kill them by cutting their heads off. Can there only be one? Can you have multiple aces? I think if I have to pick between the two, I'm picking Christian Javier. But I leave this to you at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN, twitch.tv/ESPN975. From Todd the Show, Framber is an ace. Without him, the bullpen wouldn't have been as good as they were. He did take a lot of work off of them. Would calling him a workhorse be more correct, given that he led the American League in innings pitched, and on top of that, he had all those consecutive quality starts? 25, that's insane. It really is an insane number to go that far. I mean, Justin Verlander, who had an incredible year last year, didn't even do that. It's pretty impressive. And Framber was more reliable in the postseason. But the term workhorse, I think, in the eyes of some, could be considered somewhat insulting, if not racist, right? I mean, I know we've gotten to that point where if there's any animal descriptions or comparisons made to athletes these days, some people are going to throw a hissy fit, and I'm not intending to do that, but you do know that Framber Valdez is the guy who's going to be able to go the distance for you.
I think he led the majors in innings pitch.
Definitely the American League.
And he had 25 quality starts. And
right.
He was fifth in AL Cy Young voting.
Right. I mean, but he wasn't the ace last year because of how good Justin Verlander was. And
but
Verlander
I think you can have two aces on one team.
I actually agree with that. I do. I feel like, though, if I have to pick between one or the other, I'm picking Christian Javier over Framber Valdez. And I might be too much of a Christian Javier stan, and he might have a terrible year this year.
Yeah, let's see it for a full year of starting for Christian Javier. I think he's still good just before we, like, call him an ace.
That's fair.
If Framber threw 25 straight quality starts and we're like, not sure if he's consistent enough. Christian Javier started half of the season, and we're like, ace. That seems a little too much. I get he's more tantalizing of a prospect, but I still give it to Framber because read the first part of the Wikipedia definition, who's going to start opening day? Probably Framber. Most likely Framber, barring injury.
That is true, but I think here's the funny thing about baseball. There are lots of moments where entitlement creeps into the game, where specific players are expecting, like, hey, I get to do this. Being the opening day starter is a big deal. And I think going into last year, wasn't there some hesitation over Verlander being the opening day starter because he wasn't with the team at the end of the 2021 season? I feel like that was a storyline. And there was an expectation that maybe it's going to be Framber to open up the season because of that. Like, that was a feeling inside the clubhouse. Off the top of my head, I honestly forget if it was Framber or if it was Verlander to open the year. I do believe it was Verlander, but I honestly could be wrong on that front. It's an expectation. It is an honor. sort of like the same thing where some players who have played in the game a really long time who maybe aren't as good at their position as they used to be, Derek Jeter, don't move away from shortstop for somebody else who's actually a superior player at the position like Alex Rodriguez. Honestly, we're going to talk about the greatest Yankees ever. How about Aaron Judge potentially giving up right field to move to left field for Giancarlo Stanton? How about that?
That's very selfless. Framber did start.
It was Framber. Okay.
It looks like. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was what was going into the regular season. I appreciate the help. I'm sorry. Sometimes all this stuff.
And it was so hard to look up because it started with this year's schedule and there's no like grid to go back last year. So I had to click the back button 12 times on MLB.com.
Outrageous.
Come on, MLB.com.
Come on. Yeah. Clean it up. Clean it up. And indict the Dodgers. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. What is an ace? Is Framber Valdez definitively the Houston Astros ace? I would go with Christian Javier because I think he's got better stuff. But to Sean's point, maybe I do need to wait for an entire year, given that Framber Valdez just led the American League in pitching.
He just had the year you're expecting from Javier.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm being a shill for the Houston Astros right now. Someone who was not a shill for the Houston Astros, Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, is in West Palm Beach at Astros spring training. We're going to ask him about Jeremy Peña's arms. That's it. The whole segment. It's just going to be about that. No, we'll ask him about what's going on at spring training. First, though, I got to tell you about my friends at TGS Insurance. Guys, insurance rates are skyrocketing. Skyrocketing. Inflation. It's made everything more expensive, including your home policy. But some customers, I mean, they were really feeling it. 30, 40, even 50% increases before they switch to TGS. Why do people switch to TGS? Because, well, first off, you're saving money, but it's fast and easy to save money, too. Because you get an instant quoting system that delivers you savings in 15 seconds when you text the word money to 232323. The system just asks for your address and you send it back. Boom. Full quote, excellent coverage. It's 15 seconds away. This company and the savings are legit. If you want to look it up yourself, 2,000 five-star reviews. The average customer from 2022 is still saving nearly $1,000 on their home insurance. Whoa. Simple, fast, easy, big savings. The TGS Insurance way. Let them work for you today. One more time. Text money to 232323 to get your home insurance quote and save big today.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
And joining us right now from West Palm Beach at Astro Spring Training, the one and only Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. Chandler, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to hear from you. So, before we dive into what's going on at spring training, in the last segment, we were talking about the piece that you have in the Houston Chronicle about Framber Valdez embracing the role of an ace. This is a subjective question, sort of like the idea of what a franchise quarterback is. But in your opinion, what is a baseball ace?
In my opinion, I think the term is kind of overused. I personally wouldn't put Framber Valdez in the ace category yet. I think ace is reserved for guys like Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw, you know, that ilk. I mean, for me, I mean, this is just my opinion. I think ace is that you have to do it for a while. You have to be, I'm not saying you have to be a first ballot Hall of Famer like those three guys, but you've got to prove yourself a little bit more than, you know, maybe Framber has to be considered a true ace. Now, I mean, I guess fans and other people can view it however they want. You know, certainly on this staff, if there is going to be an ace, it certainly sounds like it's going to be Framber, and he's given every indication and has a track record, a short track record, albeit, to back it up. But in my opinion, I think the term ace is overused a little bit. I think it should be reserved for, you know, 5, maybe 10 pitchers in the game. And, you know, I don't think Framber has reached there yet, but who knows, maybe he could get there.
With the consistency he showed this season, it does seem like he is on the right track. I'm glad you answered it that way, because it does feel like it's the same way that we talked about the word elite when it came to quarterbacks in the NFL like about a decade ago. It started off with a select few, and then all of a sudden we were deciding to put Joe Flacco there. I'm not saying that Framber Valdez is Joe Flacco, but Framber Valdez had a very good year. I guess my question is, I really like Christian Javier's stuff. I feel like it wouldn't be that long before we could be looking at Christian Javier and perhaps saying, yeah, this guy's clearly a bit of a better pitcher than Framber Valdez. Is that something that you could see happening?
I mean, certainly. I mean, certainly the Astros think so if they're going to give him $64 million and the contracts they gave him. But I think when we got to kind of go back to track record. You know, baseball is such a sample size sport. It's such a, you have to kind of show it for more than one season. You have to show it for more than maybe two seasons sometimes. And, certainly, Framber Valdez has the track record that Christian Javier doesn't. Neither of them have a long track record by any means. But certainly, I think Christian Javier, if he does what he did in the second half last year and in, you know, the playoffs when he was basically unhittable, I think certainly, yeah, he could vault himself, you know, past Framber Valdez and be the best, most elite pitcher on the staff. But he kind of just has to go out there and do it. Kind of, he has to, you know, put more innings out there. I mean, he's only thrown more than 110 major league innings once. He's got to prove his durability a little bit, but the stuff is, you can't question the stuff. The stuff's really, really good. And the Astros hope, you saw like actions speak louder than words, and the deal they gave him, they think that there's more in there. They think he can be durable. He's just got to go out there and do it.
Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. He covers the Houston Astros. Chandler, the big news thus far out of spring training has been injury-related, and I don't know that the sky is necessarily falling, but Yordan Alvarez once again dealing with a hand issue. Lance McCullers, another elbow issue. These have been patterns for both of these two players. What's your level of concern for both?
Well, I kind of want to be hesitant to call what Lance McCullers has an elbow issue because we don't know. Like, no one has told us what is wrong with him. I mean, you know, we've heard arm, we've heard elbow. I want to shy away from going into any specifics because no one will tell us anything. Lance McCullers has not spoken to reporters since we've been allowed into camp. To be quite honest, I have not seen him. He's here. Other people have seen him. I just personally myself have not seen him in West Palm Beach since I got down here. So without talking to him, I really don't want to give any, you know, specifics as to what is injured. But I certainly think as the days go by and he hasn't picked up a baseball and there's still kind of sketchy information out there, just no information out there about what's going on, the concern level rises because, I mean, the longer you go without throwing, the longer you get set back. And, you know, traditionally, after something like this, you don't just go back to throwing on the mound. Like, you have to build back up a little bit. And, you know, it the longer he goes without throwing, I certainly think more concern is warranted. With Yordan Alvarez, it doesn't sound near that drastic. You know, he was in pretty good spirits. He basically just said, yeah, you know, we'd rather take a couple days rest during spring training than, you know, push it and have something happen in the season. They're here for 6 weeks. Again, I think with him, though, if he doesn't start swinging a bat in the next couple days, as he said he would, then you can maybe start to get worried a little bit. But just judging by the tone of how Yordan spoke, judging by kind of the tone of people in camp, it doesn't sound like that's one to be too overly concerned about.
Chandler Rome on the HRNP guest line from West Palm Beach at Astros spring training. From the outside looking in, it seems like right now the one position battle for the Astros is center field. Chaz McCormick, it seems like it's his to lose, but he acknowledged he has to earn it. Sounds like Jake Myers is in the conversation. I know that Dana Brown had mentioned Drew Gilbert as somebody who could potentially be on this team sooner rather than later, which was somewhat noteworthy. How much of a strong, I guess, grip does McCormick have on that gig right now?
I mean, I don't think it's like a stranglehold on it. I think you have to consider him the favorite, but and I kind of wrote it this morning in a story that posted, you know, I think just fans and people, like, were so captivated by that catch in the World Series, and obviously it was huge. It's going to be one of the biggest plays in Astros history, and, you know, Chaz did play well down the stretch, but I mean, I think also a lot of people forget, like, he was demoted to Triple A in July last year. He didn't spend any time down there because Michael Brantley got hurt the day they demoted him, so they brought him back up and he never went back down. So, Chaz, I mean, he's got a good attitude about it. You know, he said he came in here, he said, I have to earn it. I have to earn my job. He's got to get better against right-handed pitching. He was not a good hitter last year against right-handed pitching. Got to get a little more consistent in his swing. Got to kind of, righties are just throwing him slider after slider last year and really exploiting him. So he worked this offseason on the direction of his swing, on some better swing decisions, not chasing as much, not whiffing as much. And then Jake Myers just had to kind of show he's healthy. I mean, last year, a lot of things went wrong for him. Some of them not in his control. I mean, the Astros did not manage his season well last year at all. I think we can all say now that they rushed him back from that shoulder surgery rehab. You know, Dusty Baker was on record last year saying, he asked for Jake Myers to play more rehab games and was overruled. They brought him up and he quit it with a shell of himself. So I think an off season where he could clear his head, come into spring training healthy, I think that's going to work wonders for him. You know, he did just have a baby, so maybe there could be some dad strength that gets Myers some more pop. But I think certainly, just given how last year went, I think you do have to consider McCormick the favorite. But, Jake brings a couple things that Chaz doesn't. You know, Jake is a more natural center fielder. He's faster than McCormick. He's a better center field defender than McCormick. I think Chaz probably has the better offensive approach. He has the better offensive track record at the big league level, so they're going to have to find a way. This is not a closed competition. I think they're both going to be that's going to be the one where, I'm not saying spring training games are the end-all, be-all, but I'll be really curious to see how both these guys perform in some of these spring training games, because that could really, be the difference here.
Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle covers the Houston Astros. He's in West Palm Beach at spring training. There's been a lot of bod talk at spring training. Martin Maldonado lost 17 pounds. Mauricio Dubon's gained 25 pounds over the course of the past year. And everyone's obsessed with Jeremy Pena's Hulk-esque triceps. Which of those three has impressed you the most?
I mean, I think, Martin Maldonado obviously looks better. He looks slimmer. He looks in better shape. But, I mean, I think what Dubon did, to put on, when the Astros acquired him from San Francisco last year, he weighed 165. He reported to camp at 190. I mean, he looks like, if you look at a picture from him, last year with the Astros, if you look at it, I mean, it's pretty startling kind of how much bigger he's gotten. Now, he did that because the Astros kind of met with him, showed him his exit velocities, and basically said, look, we have data that says if you hit the ball like 1% harder, then it'll do this, and this, and it'll really kind of pay dividends for you. So he really took that to heart. I wrote that, he ate 5,000 calories, ate so
That's
much,
nuts.
He was stuffing himself, but it's not all that way. I mean, it's more muscle. Like, he was in the gym a bunch. He looks just a lot more filled out. He looks good. So, certainly that could help him. He did not have the offensive season he wanted once he got to Houston. So maybe give him a little more pop, a little more carry on the ball. Maybe that could help him.
He is Chandler Rome. Chandler, before I let you go, this is why I'm a big fan of you. I feel like you're already in regular season form online. You tweeted out about a week ago, did you know that the Astros pitching staff had only two pickoffs all season last year? One person responded, they won the World Series, Chandler. You said, where did I say they didn't? This person responds saying, is this my suspicion? Are you confirming my suspicion that the Astros suck and you hate them? You respond, get a life, clown, after saying I was writing about the rule changes. Do you feel like you need more spring training to continue to throw heat on Twitter?
No, not really. I mean, people are giving me crap today because, Dusty Baker just refused to give us injury updates and, mistakenly cited HIPAA as a reason why. And people are, trying to say that it's my fault. And it's I mean, if they're going to put the manager out there and he's going to say that on the record, then, why not write it? Maybe... update us before. I don't know. I'm just a guy. I'm just someone here, doing my job, trying to hear what's going on. So, no, I don't need any more spring training. I'm good. I think I'm regular season ready.
I think you're regular season ready as well. And by the way, nothing makes me laugh more than Dusty Baker talking about injuries. And I imagine for you guys, you deal with him every single day. He's a really, seems like a very affable guy. But whenever he talks about injuries, he's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, what hand is it? Where he's like not 100% sure what hand Yordan Alvarez has injured. I get a huge kick out of when Dusty's like that. So I apologize to them, and I know it makes your job more difficult.
Yeah, but we did find it funny that Yordan said it was his left hand that's bothering him now, but his injured list stint last year was because of his right hand. So who the hell knows which hand is actually was actually hurt last year, is actually hurt this year. One of them is hurt, and perhaps it will get better soon.
That is Chandler Rome. You can check out his work in the Houston Chronicle at Chandler_Rome if you want to see the occasional murder online. Chandler, appreciate your time, man. Let's do it again.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That is Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle. Coming up next on the Paul Gallant Show, we'll take a look at something going on in the NFL. Another diva wide receiver has emerged as perhaps the top dog in a league that doesn't have as many diva wide receivers as it used to have. Plus, another reason to like a possible quarterback for the Houston Texans in this coming draft. Paul Gallant Show, don't go anywhere.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. There's some speculation that Bills wide receiver Stephon Diggs will be traded again. Remember, at the end of the Bills-Bengals game, he was in Josh Allen's ear on the sideline a lot of the game. His brother, who apparently is stiffing people on rent, Trevon Diggs with the Cowboys. That's an interesting story, too.
I didn't see that. That's very funny.
He owes $33,000 in rent, apparently. Huh. And he's just stiffing them. At least that's what's alleged.
I'll have it on the 15th. Is that what he's saying?
I'm not 100% sure. I saw that story. I was like, okay. Stephon, meanwhile, is tweeting out extremely cryptic things, which is on brand for a lot of NFL players. You know, we, of course, saw it with Brandon Cooks. My question is, where does Stephon Diggs rank among diva wide receivers today? Because the only other people that I think are in the same conversation as him aren't in the same conversation as him as actual players in the league. Michael Thomas has not been Michael Thomas for years. I think Michael Thomas is up there. Odell Beckham Jr. did not even play for a team last year. He's up there, but is he still the same guy? Brandon Cooks, what is he, a number three wide receiver on a good team, a number two wide receiver on a good team? Who the hell else is even close to Stephon Diggs? Because it feels like we've gotten away from diva wide receivers. Chosen Anderson would perhaps apply, but I mean, is he truly a great wide receiver, one of the best in the league? He's annoying sounding, Chosen Anderson. He changed his name to Chosen yesterday, in case you missed that. I don't think anyone holds a candle to Stephon Diggs.
I think Odell is kind of close because even in the year he didn't play, he had like a four-month-long recruiting trip with every team. So he's still got, his ego pumped up a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would say, like, it's very efficient. In the year that you're rehabbing for an ACL, you're still having, like, NFL players be like, we want him so bad. Like, Jerry Jones, I want him so bad. Like, but he didn't play. Like, he just didn't play.
That's true.
That is a very diva move.
He might not have been able to play. I think that
he wasn't.
I think it was his knee wasn't 100% healed. So we'll see what happens this offseason, but I'm already tired of that.
I am
recruiting of Odell Beckham Jr.
I am going through my head of, like, I had the best receivers in the league, so it's like Jefferson, Chase, neither of them really.
Jefferson has some tendencies, but they're not anywhere close to Stephon Diggs. Like, Jefferson had some stuff going on after, I think it was the game, who did the Vikings play? Was it the Giants?
In the first playoff game?
Yeah, I think so, where he was getting annoyed with one of the corners talking some trash to him or something very, like, menial like that. So, but he's not. No one's close to Stephon Diggs right now.
Antonio Brown.
Yeah, he's out of the league. That's the thing. Like there's not enough Devo wide receivers in the league right now.
No. Hopefully the Texans draft him.
Ocho suggested DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, that's fair, but he's in Arizona, so I mean, does anyone think anyone's a diva compared to Kyler Murray there? Like he's kind of off scot-free because of the fact that he's dealing with the Kyler Murray show. I'm starting to lean more towards the Texans drafting CJ Stroud. And again, I know I gotta compare the film, but I have some concerns about Bryce Young's size. And CJ Stroud has overcome a ton of adversity. We outlined that last week. Here is an interesting tidbit about Stroud that I did not know. Stroud doesn't use social media during the year. But some more adversity on top of what we discussed last week. People were Venmoing him money so they could criticize his play. Quote, it was insane, but at the end of the day, it comes with the territory. You can do this, by the way. I would not recommend that you do it, but I've seen this done regularly by people who perhaps have been blocked by a significant other on social media accounts, by text. They're so desperate to get in contact with this person who has blocked them, they will send them like 1 cent with a description underneath it so that they have to read it or so that they can read it. I guess you could block people from paying you money on Venmo, Cash App, whatever the hell people use these days. But that's something else, that Stroud was receiving hate messages, and I would imagine after the Michigan game he was getting a lot of it, so that they could criticize his play. I really like, too, that he's off social media during the year. Do I 100% buy that? Now, that's up for debate, but that's discipline. And I think anyone who is younger than me, who is capable of staying away from those apps, is a better person for it. They are addicting. The more and more we go through life, you are finding out that having a phone is sort of like, did you guys ever read the book, The Golden Compass? I know this is going to be a strange
I saw the movie.
Okay. In that alternate universe, humans' souls are like these exterior beings that follow them all over the place. Your phone is essentially the same thing in 2023. Like, it's part of your body. You just have this device that you carry around at all times so that you can communicate with other people. Probably 100 years from now, it'll be like a part of our actual being. We will have somehow, some way, some synchronization between us and the phone. And I am glad I'm going to be dead by that time.
Can I say
that
I kind of respect the move by the Ohio State fans.
Really?
Or by whoever did that.
Sending him like a 1 cent in addition to a message, you're trash, stop losing to Michigan, you bum.
I appreciate the hustle and the passion.
The Ohio State
University. It's a very like Ohio State thing. And I just want to tip my cap to the Buckeyes on that one.
We are fair and balanced. I roast Buckeye fans all the time for being way too proud about their school, which is not as good of a school as they make it out to be. It's not. Michigan's a superior school as far as academics and all those things. Also, it's located in Ohio. But Sean Mapes, he's going to give you your flowers.
I appreciate that. I feel like that's a move where if we read about it, that like it's a French soccer team. Fans of a French soccer team did that. We're like, man, they just care so much over there. Like, no, like, I'm going to tip my cap. You guys care a lot.
What were those texters from earlier this year saying when we were discussing Ohio State? Don't you know that 600,000 people have immigrated from Ohio to Texas? It's like, yeah. I wonder why. The Ohio State University. I can't stand those fans. I can't. I just can't. Like,
41-14.
There's such entitlement, and there's such a chest puffiness with you guys that reeks of like overcompensation for something. It really does. Anyway, Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. While we're on big-time sports programs, it's pretty impressive how badly Alabama basketball has bleeped things up in the midst of two players, Darius Miles being the centerpiece, but also freshman Brandon Miller, and their involvement in one case with Miles and being in the wrong place at the wrong time, in quotation marks, when it comes to Miller. The way they've handled this, I'm going to outline it for you next. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5,
92.5. ESPN 97.5. This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
The story that is surrounding the Alabama basketball program right now is a truly horrible, sad, tragic one. You might have been aware of it a couple of weeks ago. Former Alabama basketball player Darius Miles, per investigators, supplied a gun that was involved in the shooting death of 23-year-old Jamia Harris in Tuscaloosa. Michael Davis, who is not an Alabama basketball player, fired the shot. He and Miles were both arrested and charged with capital murder. Stories like this come out. Facts come in slowly. It leads to rampant speculation. And I think it's always important to note that the only people that truly know what happened in this situation are Darius Miles, Michael Davis, the two again charged with capital murder, the boyfriend of Jamia Harris, who was in the car when the shooting happened, and others. All we have to go off of are what investigators make public. But those investigators, of course, were not there at the scene. There is, I guess, video evidence of what actually went down. But the big development yesterday is that Alabama freshman Brandon Miller, who, if I'm not mistaken, Sean Mapes behind the glass, is thought to be a first-round prospect and is one of the big reasons that Alabama has been one of the best programs in college basketball this season, right? This is the guy.
He's like a top five NBA draft prospect.
Okay.
So this is like, if, you know, any top five pick, this would be a crazy story. He's also on a top 10, top five college team too.
Right. This is a crazy, crazy story. So the allegation right now is that Bama freshman Brandon Miller brought the gun that was used in the killing to the scene of the crime. This is what Alabama head coach Nate Oates had to say about Brandon Miller's possible involvement yesterday at a press conference. It has not gone over well, what Oates said.
Yeah, I mean, we've known the situation since we've been fully cooperating with law enforcement the entire time. I mean, it's the whole situation's sad. I mean, you just think of it. We team closed practice with a prayer for the situation today. Again, knowing that we had this trial today, I mean, you think of Jamia and her family and Kane. Really think about her son Kane that was left behind. So it's sad. We knew about that. I mean, you know, you can't control everything anybody does. Outside of practice, nobody knew that was going to happen. College kids are out. Brandon hasn't been in any type of trouble, nor has he in any type of trouble on this case, like in the wrong spot at the wrong time. So we'll address it when I'm sure NBA scouts will ask. They do their homework. But, yeah, I mean, I think the article that it came out in also stated Brandon's been interviewed. He's you know, they're comfortable with everything that happened there.
He's been getting crushed for that. I think specifically the comments that you can't control what players do off campus. But he did sound very sad about what happened to the victim, whose name seems to be getting forgotten a lot, Jamia Harris, and then started talking about Brandon Miller. Maybe he needed some better coaching from a PR person at Alabama. He's not wrong in that he can't control what happens off campus. He can't. I think that there's an expectation of coaches to be firmly on top of these guys at all times, like babysit them. It maybe got a little tone deaf towards the end when he's talking about sort of the things that maybe people in the media are thinking about but not saying aloud about how this could potentially affect him as a draft pick, talking about what scouts are doing and the investigation into him. What Nate Oates did that was worse was when he said that former NFL linebacker Ray Lewis is among people he has spoken to after Darius Miles was arrested and charged with capital murder. That was a bad look. As far as the rest of this and to the actual involvement of Brandon Miller, there are definitely a lot of things that we're not 100% sure of. But I did take some notes after reading a sometimes confusing article that had been laid out by ESPN and a better write-up of it at Alabama.com. So, as I said a little bit earlier, Miller brought the gun that was used in the killing of Jamia Harris. Darius Miles asked Miller to bring it. 8 shots were fired at the car with Harris and her boyfriend and her cousin inside of it. The way that this, at least per police, started, Michael Davis, the man who shot the gun, was dancing outside the late Jamia Harris's car. He tried to speak with Harris. From the sound of things, it seems like he was shooting his shot. Her boyfriend claimed that things got elevated in an interview with police. Davis reportedly said, "You don't know who I am and what I do." So after this incident that took place outside of a bar / club, Darius Miles texted Alabama freshman Brandon Miller, "I need my joint," which apparently means "I need my gun." That's at least what police surmised. So my question is, was it Darius Miles' gun? Or was it Brandon Miller's gun? That is unclear. Miller brought the gun, and Miles told Davis a round was in the chamber. Did Miles put the round in the chamber? Was the round in the chamber already? I'm surprised that some of the anti-gun activists haven't jumped on this. This is just, from the sound of things, on all accounts, absolutely horrible usage of firearms, and irresponsible, I guess, is the way to describe it, before we even get to the actual shooting itself. Like, this seems like they're handling it like a bunch of amateurs, and you would think that people would be a little bit smarter when it comes to handling weapons and stuff like that. I don't want to turn this into a guns, should we or shouldn't we, conversation, but this is, like, horrible. Hey, did Miller give Miles a gun that had a round in the chamber already? Seems like that's rather dangerous. Anyway, I'm not going to act like I know a lot about guns. I'm going to continue to read about the facts that we do know. Brandon Miller dropped Miles off at the club this night, but supposedly he did not stay because the line was too long. But Miles did text Miller to come back with the gun, which is maybe Miller's gun and maybe Miles' gun. Also noteworthy, 2 vehicles, a Dodge Charger and a Dodge Challenger, that belonged to Brandon Miller and another Alabama player, Jaden Bradley, were blocking the road behind the Jeep where Jamia Harris was shot and killed. So Bradley was at the scene of the shooting, Jaden Bradley. There's nothing about Brandon Miller here, though. And I think that there will be developments in the coming days. I don't know what they will be, but I don't think that Brandon Miller is completely out of the woods just yet. Tuscaloosa Chief Deputy Paula Whitley, when asked by Alabama.com why Miller was not charged, said, "That's not a question I can answer. There's nothing we could charge him with, according to the law." But man, there's a lot of things here that indicate his involvement was more than just driving Darius Miles here and then leaving. I don't want to speculate too much because we only can work with the facts that we have in front of us, but it feels fishy, doesn't it? You hear all of that outlined to you? Does that sound like Brandon Miller's completely in the clear? Does it sound like the Tuscaloosa Police Department is treating, I guess, everyone who was around the crime scene as as if they were a part of this? I mean, it's a very, very, very sad story, but also one that I want to make sure that we just reveal the facts for now that we have. I think we're going to get more facts in this one. But I don't think that Brandon Miller is out of the woods just yet, just based off of reading this. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in as well. Some people are saying wrong place at the wrong time. I mean, it could be that. It could be. But you don't definitively know that.
I mean, he went to the wrong place, though, because he brought the gun that was used in a murder. That's not like he was just sitting in the passenger seat. He's like, what's going on, guys?
And
he was, and
all we know is his car was there.
Yeah.
Even though he supposedly dropped Miles off at the club, from the sound of things, he drove back to outside of the club because his car was there. Unless somebody else drove the car with the gun. So wait and see. I don't want to speculate too much, but this is a really interesting story. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. And absolutely brutal that Jamia Harris died in this. 23 years old. She had a kid. And these drunk guys, sounds like they were drunk when it happened. I mean, they took a life acting like complete morons. Horrible, horrible, horrible story. Up next, I have a question. We're going to shift to talking about the Houston Astros and some new developments when it comes to sign stealing in baseball coming out of Los Angeles. Do you guys want to stay on this story about sign stealing? How much longer do you want to be here? Or is it time to move on? I'm going to tell you why it's time to move on next. Paul Gallant Show.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.